someone will see me on the bus and be like, "Is that are you on the Drupal.org website?" Like,
you got 3,000 plus or minus estimated people who drive or fly or ride a bike or take a bus or walk just to talk about Drupal. It got Drupal.com. Oh, thank God we got Drupal.com. Open source and the license is free. Built and maintained by community. You got Drupal.com.
Hello and welcome to Drupal Easy podcast number 35. I'm your host for today, Ryan Price, and we have also Mr. Michael Anello.
Hey, hey.
And our special guest today is none other than Josh Koenig of Hi. Chapter 3 and so many other things that we're going to talk about. Welcome to the podcast, Josh.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
So, Josh, you and I talked a little bit over email before about all the crazy things you have going on. Do you want to give us just like the Reader's Digest version of what you've got maybe that's on the front of your brain today even?
Sure. Yeah. So on the front of my brain today is actually, DrupalCon coming up next week and all the flurry of information and announcements that come out around that. There's a lot of cool things that are happening in the Drupal space. I think, right now I'm thinking back to DrupalCon Paris and the state of the Drupal keynote that Dries gave, in which he talked about the maturing process that we're going through as a project and as a community, and moving from a interesting hobby technology to a great tool for doing customized, very unique, special systems to something that can be used as a platform to something that almost becomes like a utility service just to get people onto the internet and get, empower them to do their thing online, and actually pursuing that arc with somewhat more, intentionally. That's pretty exciting. He laid out an interesting vision there. And in the past 6 months, a lot of stuff has happened that has pushed that vision forward. I mean, clearly, Dries' involvement, not just with Drupal, but with Acquia in, they're going to be pushing and debuting Drupal Gardens, which is a really amazing and wonderful thing. Other people have come along with similar ideas like Buzzer. And there are a number of sort of, underlying technologies that are going to power all that, like Drush, Eager, Features, some of the new things that are going to be possible with install profiles. I've been more and more interested in and excited by the infrastructure that underlies a lot of what powers Drupal in the past year. Because largely there's the development that's going on the top, on the front end of the system, where we can do more and more amazing things with theming, with jQuery UI. That's just been going like a rocket. And the question to me is no longer, can we build a really beautiful website with Drupal? Can we build a functional website with Drupal? That's it's still a challenge to meet each use case, but to me that's a pretty solved problem. The tools are there. The question now is, can we go from 300,000 or so Drupal websites out there to maybe like three or 10 million in the next couple of years? And that brings up all these really interesting infrastructure questions. And it's pretty exciting to me to be involved with the dynamic Drupal community in all of its wonderful twists and turns, but just with a lot of really smart people that are trying to solve these problems and make Drupal something that can be much more widely popular and increase its reach beyond what it currently is. So that's a précis of what is on the front of my mind going into DrupalCon.
Well, good.
Wow.
Note to self, do not put Josh Koenig and Doug Van in the same room. and Morton, all three of those people, there'd be like some sort of an explosion. So your answer, I think, was maybe 3 or 4 minutes long. It was awesome, though. It was good. That's a fantastic just like heads up display of what the world of Drupal looks like right now, I think. But let's start with DrupalCon. That's happening first. That's happening most recently, and people may be listening to this on the airplane or in their car or on the train on their way to San Francisco.
Yeah, we're recording this on Tuesday the 13th. So basically a week from now will be the middle of DrupalCon, and Josh, I know you don't have too far to travel, but Ryan and I will be getting on a plane on Saturday.
Yeah,
I leave on Saturday at least.
Yeah.
So it tell us a little bit as far as, I mean, Chapter 3 seems to be, fairly involved, to say the least.
Yeah, we decided, you know, about a year, a little bit more than a year ago, to really try to take the sort of like pole position and invest the time and energy to bring DrupalCon to San Francisco and to be very involved in the organizing. And, you know, it's not at all, I think DrupalCon San Francisco has a really great host committee. Unlike DrupalCon DC, which, you know, Development Seed really championed, you know, we've been central and instrumental. My partner Matt Cheney's been sort of running the organizing committee for the past year, but everyone else in the San Francisco community has stepped up in a huge way. You know, we've gotten people from across the map, other shops, individuals. There's a pretty active local user group in both Berkeley and San Francisco and other sort of, you know, Silicon Valley areas. So all those folks have stepped up and contributed in a huge way. But yeah, we definitely decided to sort of be the tip of the spear on that. And, you know, so, and it's a big deal for us. It's our hometown. The Moscone Center is only about like 6 blocks from our office. So we feel like this is our chance to bring Drupal to our home turf and to have the biggest DrupalCon ever. I mean, we're going to get close to 2,700, maybe 2,750, maybe 2,800 attendees before all is said and done, which is going to be crazy. Yeah. But it's a pretty huge accomplishment for the project and for the community. And I know we're all really proud of the work that's been done to make a conference like of that scale possible.
Hey, so if you take out the sessions, what are you looking forward to most about this DrupalCon? You know, the fact that it's in your hometown, you know, some of the surrounding events. What do you think is, you know, maybe something that's flying under the radar a little bit that's gonna really capture some attention?
I think one of the interesting things that will hopefully happen that is an implicit promise for this DrupalCon is that because we're in San Francisco, which is so, you know, closely connected to the internet brain trust, if you will, it's certainly not the only place in the world, but it's one of the places where like the internet really got its birth. I see this in some ways it's a Drupal coming out party to the world. Like, everybody's hot on this technology, everyone's heard about it and knows about it, but there are a lot of people who only know about it as like a trending topic or something in a tag cloud. And I really hope that this conference gives us the ability to, you know, stand up and display ourselves to the entire sort of A-list of the internet world. And then beyond that, I think like the thing for me is always just like seeing people and being able to connect the faces behind the screen names and have a beer with you know, folks that I've traded code with or helped out in IRC or who have helped me out. I owe a lot of people a lot of beers, I got to tell you. but this is something that's truly unique to our project and our community, is the fact that we have this very strong interlinking of real social connections where people, you know, they may not see each other but once or twice or three times a year at these types of conferences, but like are legitimately friends. And that's actually, unfortunately, kind of unusual in the technology world. And I think it's one of the things that's made our project so so strong and so good and helped it advance in, you know, in spite of like some other things that could have, you know, caused major ups and downs.
So Josh, yeah. do you actually think though those very tight bonds plus the comment you brought up before about going from 300,000 to 3 million or more, is that going to create you know, sort of an inner circle?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest issues that we've certainly faced, like this question of cliquishness. And there's also just the questions of scale. Like, as you go and you grow from, you know, the first Drupal conference session thinger that I ever attended was in Vancouver in 2006. It was the Open Source CMS Summit. And there was, like, all told 200 people there, maybe like 150 of whom were really Drupalists. That's a really different feeling from DrupalCon DC, which had 10 times as many people. And it changes things. It definitely does. But I think that the beauty of what we've got going on is that we're fairly open and we're fairly conscious of this, the potential for this problem. I think most of the leaders in this community, starting with Dries, I mean, he really is a lot of this flows from the top. He's extremely conscious of this. And that's why, like, this core developer summit that's happening the Saturday before, it's really for people to get back to what the old DrupalCons used to be like, where it was people who were really involved in developing this stuff on a daily basis who just want to, like, really focus on those types of problems and not promoting my module or my project or talking about my vision. It's like, what do we need to do as core people? But rather than it being, oh, you have to have some lines of code in Drupal core or you have to have known somebody, it was submit some slides, right? Show that even if nobody knows your name, that you've got some insight and you care and you're welcome to come. And so it's this process of continually figuring out ways to be open and to let new people in and let old people step away if they need to for a while. And to allow alternative centers of gravity to emerge, right? So there's as Drupal goes really global and worldwide, you know, there'll be different, I see different sort of groupings of people working on stuff that interests them. So David Strauss, what he started by creating Pressflow, has created a little center of gravity around there. And there's inevitably some tension that emerges between these different centers of gravity, but the fact is that everybody there sees themselves as part of the bigger ecosystem. And nobody's trying to break away. Nobody's trying to intentionally, like, do anything that would be harmful to anyone else's interests. It's just like, well, I really want to figure out how to make super high-performance websites, so I'm going to invest my time and energy over here. I may not be aware of what's going on in the new Drupal rendering system and the themer world. At some point, we'll have to connect the dots. But, you know, there's sort of a sub-community over here and a sub-community over there. And, you know, so we end up with less of like one big family and more like a huge extended family network. And that's the only way that this can actually function. And, you know, it's certainly going to be a challenge, but I think we've got a good shot.
Well, let's look at take a look at the other end of the spectrum where, you know, with 27, possibly 2,800, you know, people here, it's fair to say that there's going to be a lot of newbies at this conference.
For sure.
So, I mean, this question is, you know, for both of you guys is, I mean, what kind of advice, you know, could we give newbies going to their first DrupalCon, and especially, you know, this one that is just so ginormous? I know the first thing that comes to my mind is not to be 100% focused on attending every single session. You know, make some time to, you know, talk to people and go to the social events and, you know, kind of get a better feeling for what, you know, what makes the community tick. But, and I'm just wondering, what do you guys think as far as, you know, if you were talking to someone who's never been to DrupalCon, who's really into Drupal, what advice would you give them for getting the most out of it?
Well, I've got a short one really quickly. Download a copy of TweetDeck, which I believe works on pretty much everything, and start searching for the word DrupalCon, and then start watching all of the really interesting stuff that's happening in the back channels. And there's going to be maybe Josh could answer this a little bit better than me, but in past DrupalCons, there have been a specific IRC chat for each room, and there's a million ways to get on IRC. Drupal.org/IRC has pointers to a lot of those, but watch the back channel happen, and, you know, then after the session is over, try to find those people. Start in the room where you're sitting, or start with the subject you're currently discussing, and make a few connections there. Then, as Mike was saying, take it to the hallway, take it to the restaurant across the street, take it to, is there a billiards night, Josh? Am I right about this?
There is, I believe, a billiards night. There's a number of, the social calendar for the conference is pretty sprawling, mainly because, like, there are going to be so many people there, it's not possible to have everyone go to the same event.
That would be fun, though.
Yeah, it will. Some of the things are definitely going to be pretty full, but hopefully not too full, so... Yeah, I think, you know, there's going to be the opportunity to take conversations out of the conference and into the night, and that's clearly a big part of Drupal. I mean, some people, you know, have families and kids that are coming with them or that they have to go home to, so that's a little harder. But at least, you know, grab a bite after the conference with people. I mean, it's a cliche that, like, the real value of the conference that you go to is the things that happen in the hallways, not the things that happen in the rooms. I think that's less true of DrupalCon because of the nature of the conference. It's less promotional and more practical and pragmatic, but still, like, those social bonds are invaluable. The other tip that that I would give is attend birds of a feather sessions.
I was just about to say that. That's exactly.
Because these are where really interesting things happen, because rather than sitting in a session where you may learn something really interesting, but it essentially, like, you're going to a lecture for the most part, like, you're watching someone's deck and you're learning about what they did, and that's a really great way for people to present and to get insight. But a birds of a feather session is a chance to sit down, like, with 10, 20 people in a room and have a conversation where everyone has something to share. And those are the types of forums where you get, like, a lot of real world advice from folks. You know, this is where people get out of the realm of my presentation of an ideal architecture and start to talk about, well, actually, I had to solve this problem and I only had a day to do it and here's what I did, which is the reality of a lot of the work that we do at the end of the day.
Yeah, it seems like another thing that the past two DrupalCons have started seeing are more and more announcements and products announcements. And this is kind of, you know, my my attempt at a segue to Pantheon and what you guys are doing. But there's been like several announcements over the last few DrupalCons. Probably the most notable is Drupal Gardens. And it seems like there's going to be more and more of those going forward. I just read a blog post this morning from Acquia about Drupal Commons, which is going to be their attempt at going after kind of software as a service for large internal organizations.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like I just said, you know, to sort of cut back against what I just said, there is this promotional aspect to DrupalCon now, partly because Drupal is such a big deal, and it's a natural place to try to say, hey, we've got something. It also, like, from an organizational standpoint, helps to drive deadlines, which I'll talk about my own project. Like, if we didn't have deadlines, I don't know that things, you know, like this, it gives you just a rally point to push to get something so that you can give it to people and sort of ship it, which is always a little bit of a scary thing. I think within reason, this is also a good thing, because this is what you do at like a big family reunion is, you know, people talk about what's new, what's news with you, what's news, you know, what's happened to you in the past year. And for us, one of the biggest things at Chapter 3 was we started this Pantheon project, which really grew out of, you know, my interest in doing more infrastructure work and starting to look at the potential of cloud computing in a very serious way. I'd sort of written it off in the early days, 2007, 2008, and I started to get more serious about it and realized there's an enormous amount of potential. And there's a really wonderful synergy between the way that a lot of us work with Drupal and the way that these cloud technologies work. And so the Pantheon project grew out of a desire that I had to open source a lot of the work that I had done, you know, for ourselves, for clients, by releasing these free Amazon EC2 machine images. So, you know, I could build a server and then you could run it, you know, on your own account, which is great. It's a lot of fun. It was fun for me to build, and it was great to get this stuff out there and see other people be able to sort of get a quick start. So I spend 6 weeks banging my head against something. You spend 6 minutes launching the image that's the result of that. And we got a lot more interest, you know, than we initially thought we would. We put together a quick little website and did our own little debut, which was just us talking with people in Paris. And the response we got was really, really positive. And so we decided to get more focused and more intentional about it. And we developed Project Mercury, which is essentially our attempt to take the guesswork out of running a Drupal host server. Right. This should no longer be something where the accidental or unreluctant sysadmin has to go in and they start with Debian or Ubuntu or whatever comes from their hosting provider and starts apt-getting and installing and configuring things. You know, this stuff isn't rocket science, but it's, as Drupalists, it's not something that a lot of us do on a daily basis. And so it's kind of something, you know, where a lot of people are less than 100% comfortable constantly doing that and making sure they do it right.
So, Josh, in layman's terms, I just want to make sure we have all the terminology right. So yeah. Pantheon is basically a Drupal distribution. Is that correct?
That's not quite what it is.
Or it's more of the hosting.
It's a hosting solution. So it's right. In the business terminology, it would be platform as a service. And the idea here is Pantheon is sort of the banner, the brand for the broader project to figure out how to do things that Drupal needs generically. So like the next things we'll be doing some work with like automated testing and other stuff, development environments. But right now we're just focused on the production hosting with Project Mercury. And the idea here is that as Drupalists, we shouldn't spend our time configuring Apache, MySQL, and next-generation tools like Varnish and Memcache. We should spend our time building great Drupal websites that can then be effortlessly deployed onto these cutting-edge platforms that let you do things like get on Dig without having your server crash. So we want to make this into where people can focus on building wonderful Drupal websites, and the hosting is just sort of a no-brainer. It's like a sure thing. You just say, okay, we deploy onto Mercury, and we'll be fine. And that's a pretty big promise to make. It'll take us a while to really be totally bulletproof, but we're pretty close now for most mainline use cases. And the idea here is that you can get a server in 3 to 5 minutes. You can install. You can use the basic installation that comes on the server. So it, Drupal is there, but it's not configured to do much other than be fast. But then you can load your own Drupal site onto that and use that platform to then have a cutting edge, you know, A+ class web host for your Drupal site. And this just gets more and more important as we go into the future, where like I'm super excited by the fact that we can have independent, you know, what would normally be termed relatively, quote, small websites that could, from a, you know, a content standpoint, do like millions of hits a month, right? And you don't have to be a big media agency to do this anymore. You could be just a local group. That's really exciting. I also think it's important to get to that, you know, that next order of magnitude leap, to go from 300,000 or so websites running Drupal to 3 million or so. We have to make it way easier for people to launch Drupal websites. And that's what we're working on.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the getpantheon.com website right now, and it looks like you guys are going to be offering Mercury hosting starting at $50 a month. And that basically gets people a place to put their Drupal site that is pre-configured for speed.
Exactly. It's got all these technologies that are, and again, like, it's all open source too. So I really encourage people that are interested in this stuff to really dig into it. And you can go and set all this up on your own server. You can launch one of ours and rip it apart and see how it all works. That's part of what I think is so exciting about this too, is that we're growing a community of practice around this concept of high performance websites. And we're going to offer an on-demand hosting service. That's sort of our debut at DrupalCon. And we're also going to give it away for free on Amazon. And we're also going to offer it through hosting partners if you want like a managed, more of a managed hosting type of thing, where people are going to be on the sysadmin side constantly checking up with you. You can get that through a partner. We're hoping that this is available in a lot of different flavors and a lot of different forms. And then we just say, it's a sure thing. This is what you do when you want your Drupal to scale. And we just answer that problem, and we can then move on to much more interesting problems.
Yeah, it's interesting, Josh, that you say you have, you know, those hosting partners, because that for me was going to be the sort of caveat for anybody listening to our show who maybe has a, you know, draconian IT practices that they have to work with, where, you know, we're not allowed to host anything outside of the firewall, as it were. Right. And as soon as you go to EC2, it's giving up that control, whether it's real or imagined, that, well, now somebody else has our bits. But if you've got this ability to go to these hosting partners, and like you were saying, Acquia is talking about doing this software as a service. A lot of times when they have those software as a service, it comes with this contract that says, well, there's a sandbox around all of your data and nobody's allowed to look at it, and here are all these extra provisos that we've got. So it seems like you've got something really well thought out. You guys have spent the time and done your homework here.
Yeah, I mean, this comes from our experience working with, you know, it's the combination of experience that we've had as a consultancy with a long time in the Drupal world, almost 4 years, doing you know, hundreds of websites literally for individual customers who we see as our, like, these are our people, and then doing some other big enterprise work where you start to, you know, understand and really fully contemplate the restrictions around certain people's use cases and the types of things that come up when you start talking about really large scale deployments. And so we want to bring these two worlds together to say, hey, we should make it really easy to launch this website. You should be able to have a fast, you know, high performance website really quickly. But we also want to make sure that we can play with the enterprise customers, because they should be able to use these technologies too. And we can drive the whole market forward that way. We're not at all focused on the enterprise as in terms of our service, but like there's a lot of people that work within those types of entities that are definitely picking up the open source side of our technology, implementing it themselves, or our hosting partners are probably going to be more interested in that side of the market.
Hey, Josh, are you presenting anything on Pantheon at DrupalCon?
Yeah, so we're going to – I have a presentation scheduled, and I'm a bad podcast interviewer. I don't know the time off the top of my head. I think it's on Tuesday afternoon. And myself and one of the engineers from the Rackspace Cloud are going to talk about how we put together the on-demand service. So I'll give a little bit of an overview on what we're doing and what Pantheon is, and then we'll sort of get into the dirty details of building Drupal hosting as a service on the Rackspace Cloud.
It's Tuesday, 9:45 a.m.
Tuesday morning.
Tuesday morning. Tuesday afternoon. So you can't stay out too late Monday night.
I can stay out pretty late. It's going to be good. So we're doing that, and then directly following that, Barry Jaspin from Acquia is going to talk about the issues they encountered and the process they went through in developing the Acquia hosting, which is, you know, significantly more robust than what we've built. We're building something that's designed for individual, you know, small to medium-sized Drupal site providers. They're really, you know, aggressively going after the big guys. And so they have redundancy and high availability concerns, which, you know, opens a whole other can of worms. So it'll be a nice 1-2 punch for people that are interested in hosting and interested in the cloud, because we'll talk about how we met our use case on Rackspace, and then Barry's going to talk about how Acquia did its thing with Amazon.
And those are back-to-back?
Yeah, back-to-back.
Oh, fantastic.
And that was actually something that, you know, if we get a chance to talk with some of the people that were really involved in the day-to-day of conference organizing, that was one of the things that we really looked at when we put together the schedule, was trying to create not just these overall tracks of, like, people that are interested in theming and people that are interested in, you know, server stuff or module development, but actually how can you stick together sessions so, A, you don't get the, I want to be in three places at once type of thing, but you also get, like, good progressions of, like, well, people could go to this, and then they could go to this, and then they could go to this, and that would make for, like, a killer afternoon at DrupalCon.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I'm a room manager volunteer on Tuesday, and I was looking at the sessions in the room that I'm going to be at, and there's, like, three sessions in a row about MySQL.
Mm-hmm.
I was exactly. Like, wow, is that a coincidence, or that has to be planned, right? And now I know.
Yep. I mean, this is, you know, we're getting smarter about how to run a conference every time we do one. So that's thanks to a lot of the organizers from Paris and D.C. actually gave us a lot of tips on, you know, scheduling and what seemed to work well. And people like that. People like to have a little bit of a home base while they're at a conference, especially one that's going to be as big and have as many things going on as this one will be.
So Josh, you know, and I know we don't have a lot of expertise on your level about exactly what went into it, but is it then safe to say that maybe some of the sessions were handpicked to sit in the spot? I just want to know why my session didn't get picked.
Ah, the session criteria. So the session criteria was partly a matter of editorial decision. So there's, you know, the conference organizing committee makes the final call about what gets in and what doesn't. A lot of it was based on voting. So that's, like, the first filter we can use. We can look at things that were very highly voted. And there's sort of a power law distribution where they're like, there were a few sessions that got a ton of votes. And it was really clear that, like, you know, those sessions should be in. And then there were some sessions, and then there's a lot of sessions that got a few votes and some that didn't get very many at all. But really it was like, okay, those top sessions have to be in. And then it was a question of, like, well, you know, the quality of the session description, whether or not there was a recognized sort of expertise around something, and a bunch of other factors. And ultimately we're vetting 4 times as many proposals as there are slots for things. So, you know, most people's proposals didn't get in, unfortunately. And, you know, then it's a question of how well does this fit into a track. Each different track had a set of chairs. So I helped co-chaired the Under the Hood track along with Earl Miles and Ankur Rishi. And, you know, did proposals very early. We emailed a bunch of people and said, hey, you should propose something. And so if those people did go ahead and submit a proposal and it was good, we could put a little weight on the scale as the track chairs to say, we think this should be in. I think this will be a good talk. I know this person knows what they're talking about and they give a good presentation, so let's put that on the schedule. So there is definitely some handpicking that goes on there. But a lot of it came down to just like, okay, there's 4 sessions that could go here. They all got some votes. They're all from good people. We only have 1 spot. And so sometimes we combine sessions. We would talk to you know, people that made proposals, say, would you consider doing a panel together? Other times people would drop out. Like, they're like, oh, I can't come, or I actually don't have time to put it together. And that made it easy. And other times it came down to just like an arbitrary decision, unfortunately. So there you go. The conspiracy has been revealed.
Well, that's interesting that there were 4 times more sessions than slots. I was kind of curious as to how many sessions were actually proposed.
Yeah, we had 440 some proposed sessions, and wow. I think there's 103 time slots available. I think that got bumped a little bit because they added like a sort of a side separate business track for you know, talking about Drupal newbies. One of the biggest, you know, one of the biggest group of newbies out there in the Drupal universe are people who are not even necessarily developers. They're people that want to have Drupal work, you know, inside their company, organization, softball league, church, university, or whatever. And they're coming to this, like, essentially as end users that are trying to evaluate the technology and see whether or not it works for them, which is, it's really in our interest as a community to make sure that those people have a good experience. So we added some additional capacity for those types of things, for people to do like case studies and, you know, how we built the site type of things. Not like how we built it like with views, but how we built it like we had to talk to a design firm and then we had to talk to some developers. And then it turns out we had to get those people to talk to each other. And this is, you know, our day to day as Drupalists, but for a lot of people that are coming to this world from a background of, you know, static HTML files or like an IT department that just takes care of everything and you don't worry about it, they need that kind of like, here's how you work with the community, here's how you work with the shops, here's how you work with the technology yourself type of introduction.
That's amazing that there were 440 session proposals when DrupalCon, the one that was in Sunnyvale at Yahoo, I think there were about 250 people there. And I think that was actually also an OS or a CMS summit, I think was what that one was called. But I mean,
yeah, that was.
So almost 200 more session proposals than people. You know, just a few years ago. It's amazing.
that's true. I mean, the some of the numbers here, I mean, they get to be pretty crazy, and it will be interesting. I mean, some folks are a little worried. Like I saw Caroli Chicks tweeted the other day that, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to do at a conference full of 3,000 people or close to 3,000 people. Yeah. You know, will I know anybody when I show up? So it's going to be, but I'm hoping that it's going to be fun and it'll be an adventure. And when we first started, like our first committee meeting for DrupalCon San Francisco, we came up with a tagline, which was subsequently dropped, but I thought it was really nice and it sort of captured what we want to have happen, which is DrupalCon San Francisco, something magical happened. Right. And I think if we can figure out how to pull this off to have like the biggest conference ever and still have it be a good time for most people and still have it have a lot of the flavor and essence that is the sort of Drupal social universe and community, that'll be pretty magic. And that'll help us all, you know, see the future of doing more things like this, bigger and better things, but also maybe smaller and more interesting things. Like within a large conference, you can have lots of wonderful little intimate groupings together, too.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's, you know, Chicks might show up and not know anybody, but I'm pretty sure everyone's going to know him considering, I think they named a room after him, didn't they?
Yeah.
The Coder Lounge.
Yes. <So. laughs> that'll be fun. And that'll be a good place to hang out too. I think for it'll be interesting to see, you know, how the breakout goes. Because I always end up doing like some work at these conferences because, you know, just because you're going to DrupalCon doesn't mean the outside world stops. And also you meet up with someone and you're like, oh crap, this is great. You and I are both into the same thing. Let's see if we can write some code right now. That's always one of my favorite things to have happen at a DrupalCon is when you can actually come out of it with something that's been created. That's quite wonderful.
Did we lose Ryan?
I don't know. We may have.
Ryan, did we lose you?
At this point in the podcast, I lost my Skype connection and the world kind of exploded for me, but we did manage to also get Jen Lampton on the phone from the DrupalCon committee, and she was in charge of the training mostly, but she also was talking a little bit about some of the swag that they put together last minute for DrupalCon. Jen also works for Chapter 3, and here she is.
Yeah, we just ordered like 1,000 umbrellas yesterday that have the Drupal logo on them because we're worried it's going to pour next week.
Nice.
Beautiful today, but forecast does not look great. Matt's like, the way this conference is going to fail is if it rains and all these people show up in shorts and t-shirts and they're going to be miserable. So we need to order 1,000 umbrellas stat. And we're like, okay. So we looked at the cost of these and we're like, well, what are we going to do? Can we sell them? And I'm like, if you put a Drupal logo on an umbrella, people are going to want them.
Yeah, totally. So how do you get to San Francisco? Have you always lived there or?
No. Okay. So I was born and raised in Berkeley, which is right across the bay.
It's that area.
Yeah. And I actually got started working in web when I was in high school. And I took like an HTML class back in 1996. Back then, the internet was a very different place. But the year following that, one of my assignments was like, you know, teach yourself something. And so I learned more about lab. And then that summer I was like, well, hey, if I know how to do this, I should start my own company. And so I started doing websites. Then I went to college, I studied computer science. And when I came out, I was like, I'm going to do websites like on the side to make a little extra money. But of course, by then the internet had changed a lot. Like if you ignore it for 4 years and come back. So I got a job working for like a mom and pop shop in back in California. And I went to college on the East Coast. I came back to California, and I basically got to teach myself everything I'd missed in the last 4 years. Like, oh, there's this thing called CSS, and that's totally new. And, oh, you actually don't have to write HTML anymore. You can write, like, JSP or PHP or, like, whatever else. And I ended up at Chapter 3 because I started doing Drupal, previous job, and started running Drupal cons and started, and actually my boss, when I first started learning Drupal, I got stuck. And she was like, I'm going to give you $20 and you're going to go to this bar night in San Francisco and you're going to make some friends and you're going to like figure out this Drupal stuff. And I was like, okay. And that night she paid for me to get drunk with my potential new bosses, because that's when I met everyone from Chapter 3.
Oh, nice. I keep trying to tell people who aren't going, I'm like, it's like going to Woodstock. You hug everyone and you pick up strange diseases and you have a lot of fun and you get really drunk. And they're just like, with computer programmers? And I'm like, yes.
You don't understand. They're cool computer programmers, though. They're like, I think part of the reason it's so fun is that this community as a whole is really young. And so there like really aren't any stigmas as to like what a conference should be. So it's just like a big party.
Yeah. Like, you know, my first DrupalCon was DC, but I instantly felt at home. It was like, this is the kind of place that I like to be whenever possible.
I mean, there, and you know, like, okay, so we took Nika, our designer, to the DrupalCon DC, and that was her first DrupalCon, and she was really not looking forward to it. She's like, oh my God, like, I work enough at work. I don't really want to work and travel and go to a conference, and you know, this is for programmers, this isn't for me. And she ended up leaving with this like amazing sense of, you know, community among other designers, because she was the only designer we had at our company back then. And she was like completely enthused, and she's like, I didn't think that I was gonna feel at home in this community of developers, but they all, you know, they wanted to hear what I had to say, and we all just got along. So I feel like even though we are kind of a bunch of little different communities, like at DrupalCon it doesn't matter because we're all still working on the same goal. And so we also want to be like, well, what do you think about this? And it's good to hear a perspective that's different. Whereas I feel like sometimes in other situations, people are like, oh, you aren't like me. And then they leave.
Yeah. So, Jen, let's talk code sprint, because that's always one of the sort of very anticipated parts of DrupalCon. Is there a code sprint?
There are actually two code sprints. We're going to do one on Sunday immediately following the Core Developer Summit. So hopefully we'll be able to carry over some of the energy that was created there. And that'll just be open to anyone. Come in, talk to the people who are there and decide on something to work on and work on it a little bit less organized. Then we have our official code sprint, which is the Thursday following DrupalCon in the UCSF downtown location, which is just a few blocks from Moscone. We're providing coffee. And that'll be a very organized sprint where we'll have a bunch of topics that need to be covered, probably a bunch of issues in Drupal 7 that need to get resolved. And we'll try and get as many people in the same place as we can to make as much progress on that in one day as possible.
Is there anything else exciting that you just can't leave without saying right now?
Well, I do want to mention that we're trying to do something new at DrupalCon. Monday, the first day of the conference, we're doing a kind of a business expo day where we're trying to get a bunch of CEOs and people who might not normally be interested in Drupal to come down to the conference and listen to a bunch of talks in a couple of tracks where we can try and get them excited about Drupal too. One place where Drupal hasn't had an amazingly strong hold yet is in the enterprise. And we are trying to change that this year by making sure that there's something at DrupalCon that's interesting to those people. So Monday is going to be our business expo day, and that should be a big success too.
Well, it sounds really fantastic. Jen, just if somebody's looking for, you know, if they want to follow you out there in the world or they have a question about DrupalCon, where can they go?
You can find me on Twitter. I am Jen Lampton on Twitter.
Great. And I imagine that sf2010.drupal.org is a great source of information, and every time I go there, there's something new. And even one of my friends said she couldn't find a schedule, and she went in and copied and pasted a whole bunch of things about the DrupalCon schedule, and then she discovered, oh, there was an extra link that I could have clicked, and the exact kind of schedule that she was looking for was there. So you guys seem to have really thought of everything.
Yeah, we've actually done something extra with the schedule this year. If you are a DrupalCon ticket holder, you're actually able to go to the schedule page, which is sessions by day, and sign up for which sessions you want to attend. And then on your user page, it'll show you a customized view of your schedule that'll just have only the sessions that you want to attend for the whole conference there. So it'll help you kind of pick and customize your experience ahead of the conference. So hopefully people will get a lot out of that.
All right. Thanks very much for talking to us today, Jen.
You're very welcome.
And I'm sure that everyone will just have a great time, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too.
Okay. So Mike needs to leave, so.
Okay. I don't get to say goodbye?
Oh, you could say goodbye. Sorry.
I'm just kidding. All right, Jen, well, I'll see you over the weekend, I'm sure.
All right, yep, I'll be here.
Well, that about does it for our Drupal Easy podcast number 35. I've been Ryan Price. You can find more about Drupal Easy on Twitter at Drupal Easy. We also have a website for our podcast with show notes and links to everything we talked about today, drupaleasy.com/podcast. And thanks to Jen Lampton, to Josh Koenig, and to Ultimike, as always, for being around. And we promise we will have Andrew on the show very, very soon. Thanks for listening. Find us on iTunes, leave us a rating and a comment. We love that. Just search for Drupal Easy. And if you are into open source, you can find us in the Miro podcast directory. That's getmiro.com.